Thank you, ladies. It was lovely. Perhaps every student of truth at one time or another goes through the experience of judging, criticizing, or even condemning their own religious background. They may ask themselves, how can I possibly have believed that? Many of us go through a severe inner struggle to free ourselves from beliefs that we now believe are inadequate and which are no longer in line with our aspirations. The new concepts may even set them at odds with members of our own families and our friends. The first great temptation we get is to try to make our friends see the light, and often these attempts result in complete frustration, which creates even further distance between us and our loved ones. In the light of greater experience, we learn that all of our previous concepts led us to our present state of consciousness, and so we lose any desire to try to convert others to our point of view, because we learn to respect all levels of consciousness. Our friends, our acquaintances, all people we know are the result of thousands of experiences, and each is growing spiritually as fast as they possibly can. With a quickened mind, we now glance back at our background, and we seek out the truth, some of our former beliefs, maybe laughing at ourselves because the beliefs we once opposed are now seen to certain many elements contain the truth. And then we may ask ourselves, how could I have possibly reacted that way a few years ago? We will laugh at ourselves for having tried to convert others to our brand of truth. Now, when I was a child, about 5 years old, we lived in a big old house. It was my grandmother's house in western Pennsylvania, a little town called Nannyglow. And the winters in that house were long and cold. And I clearly remember my mother sealing up certain rooms so that they would not have to be heated. Each door to be closed off was sealed with some kind of cotton strip, which was glued on the outer perimeter of the door. I was in kindergarten then, and I remember my teacher trying to explain to some of us our first lesson in catechism. She would say, "Before Christ came, the doors of heaven were sealed, and no one could enter there. When people died," she would say, "they could not enter heaven, but instead they went to a place called limbo." She assured us that this was not a place of suffering, but rather it was a place for waiting. She was also very careful to mention that it was not a happy place as heaven was. It is not a place that we would want to be in forever. Now, my childish imagination would run wild as I tried to prepare in my mind how in the world heaven could possibly be sealed off. I would look up at that deep blue sky, and I would try to see if any of the doors were sealed, as my mother had sealed off the locked doors in my grandmother's house. Now, that catechism teacher, she would go on to say, "But as soon as Christ comes, the doors of heaven reopen once again, just as they were before Adam and Eve were evicted from the Garden of Eden." I would listen very attentively and very carefully to her words, trying to find out what it was all about. Even then, I wondered where I came from, and where I was going. Many years have passed, and I can now answer to my own satisfaction the question about where I came from and where I am going, where everyone has come from, and where everyone is going. Our origin is in God, and our destination is oneness with God once again. To every soul must come many Christ experiences, and each such experience opens the doors of our consciousness just a little bit more. Our vision gradually enlarges, and we come closer to seeing reality as it really is, divine and perfect in every way. Before the first Christ experience, every soul lives in limbo, and truly the doors of perception are closed. Heaven is closed to everyone who has not had at least one transcendental experience. We cannot blame God for this, as it is truly the result of each of our soul's experiences. A profound transcendental experience reveals that we are pure spirit beyond all laws of matter and beyond the laws of mind which support the latter. Time, space, and all causation is transcended. For a universe to exist, many laws are necessary. For even one person to exist, innumerable laws must function. Our many actions of the past shaped us into what we are. We are the result of millions of thoughts, millions of acts, and millions of beliefs. We are in relative consciousness or ego consciousness. We believe that we are the experiences that we are going through. We are the suffering. We are the unhappiness. And we are the poverty and the lack. In short, we are completely identified with the ups and the downs of life. Before Christ comes, we live in a world of relativity. Naturally, we try to avoid all evil that would for certain bring us pain, and we try to gain more of relative good. Years of struggle between good and apparent evil make up the story of every life. While one is living in a universe of relative values, the Christ is completely overshadowed and is not experienced. The doors of heaven are closed. But in everyone, there is that spiritual impetus leading, guiding to some sort of promised land. No matter how great the darkness may become, there is always an intuitive awareness that beyond all of this, there is light, there is peace, there is life. It is my belief that all laws of mind and matter lead each individual soul to greater and greater pain. Perfect freedom is always there. Love is always there. But it is not experienced. And perhaps this is the very nature of pain, the knowing that underneath it all is complete liberation. The best way that I can illustrate this pain is by using another metaphor from my early childhood. When it was wash day at my grandmother's house, a large boiler was placed on the wood stove. And for a while, there would be a sizzling noise. The big boiler would seem to groan. Even the water itself appeared to be in torture. It took quite a long time to boil a 20-gallon container of water, and the water seemed to want to get on with the boil. As soon as the water reached the boiling point, all of the groaning would stop, and there was a near silent bubbling activity. The water seemed happy now that it was boiling. We all want to get to the boiling point because we intuitively know that it is a state of rest and fulfillment. Relative consciousness can be likened to all the stages that water goes through, from the cold state to the boiling point. All relative experiences are leading us to the transcendental experience of one form or another. The closer we approach the experience, the greater the suffering seems to become, until finally there is that moment of total surrender to God, that moment of perfect remembrance that our origin is divine, free, and perfect. We have transcended our own relative world. We have touched the consciousness that Christ tried to reveal to all. We have entered the kingdom of heaven within, if only for a few seconds. Now life takes on a new meaning. Greater dimensions are added, and we know beyond a doubt that the doors of heaven have now opened to us. This is the meaning of you must be born anew. This is what Jesus meant when he said, "Hitherto you have asked nothing in my name." Before we were praying in the name of relative gods, and now we are learning to pray in the name of Christ, the nature of oneness. Every life that is so touched by universal consciousness undergoes profound changes. The millions of recorded relative impressions within undergo tremendous changes. The background of experience now becomes infinite, whereas before, our mind was like a computer that had been fed only relative values, and now this very source of mind itself comes into play. All concepts are completely modified. To cite again one of Jesus' beautiful parables, no one puts new wine in old wine skins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins and it will be spilled. Perhaps this parable further illustrates our first point, that pain accompanies all our experiences until the moment Christ comes. As the wine ferments inside the wineskin, there must be greater stretching. We might say that the old wineskin is suffering. Of course, the skin is not aware of the preparation of a new bottle into which the wine will be poured. And certainly, if the wine is poured into the old skin that has already been stretched to its limit, it will break. And this is what happens during our growth toward light. We stretch to a breaking point until we make the conscious discovery that we are infinite in our inner nature. The moment of surpassing the old limitations is the moment of truth. It is the moment when Christ comes. We have had many false starts in the past. We have believed that we have found truth. We may have gone from one teaching to another. We may have tried many approaches. But as long as there is a subject-object relationship, it is not the truth. As long as there remains a seeker believing certain concept, duality remains. There is still a person believing in something. No matter how near the truth such a state of consciousness reaches, still it is not the truth, because there is still duality. Someone has said that when we exchange one set of beliefs for another, we are usually changing one set of dogmas for another set of dogmas. The first phase of spiritual awakening is usually on the intellectual level. the intellect is first aroused. At this stage, everything seems to make sense. We may mistake this for actual discovery of truth, whereas in reality, this is still living in duality. The concepts we are entertaining undoubtedly have truth as their origin, but we still have an individual consciousness contemplating the concepts. We still have the two. We may believe that Christ has come, but he still has not. The great St. Thomas Aquinas labored for many, many years structuring his concepts of truth. He wrote a lengthy work called the Summa Theologica, which for centuries had been and still is the theological authority of the Roman Catholic Church. Yet to St. Thomas, there finally came the moment of transcendental truth. He was discovered attempting to burn all of his manuscripts, muttering to himself, "It is all straw. It is all straw." When Christ came to him, when that moment of transcendental consciousness happened, even his most sophisticated concepts appeared totally meaningless. At that moment, all of his previous notions were transcended and were nothing to him. But this did not mean that they were not of any value to others. Many less evolved souls were able to get spiritual nourishment from his writings, and the concepts of thousands of people in the years to follow were enlarged by studying his works. It is then safe to say that before Christ comes in any life, that person does live in limbo. Now, the dictionary describes this place as an abode after death of all unbaptized children and all righteous people who lived before Christ. From an absolute point of view, Jesus' appearance on the earth over 2,000 years ago did not change anything at all. He proclaimed that which had always been. The truth existed before the advent of Jesus. He fulfilled his mission in time and space by showing that the doors of heaven have always been open. The human race, lost and bewildered by material consciousness, caused Jesus to appear to redirect the consciousness of humanity, to reorient it spiritually speaking. He opened the doors of heaven to all who would follow in his steps. Only in the sense that a spiritually sleeping humanity would believe them to be closed. As I look back on my childhood beliefs, I can clearly see grains of truth in all of them. Truly, before Christ came into my life experience, I lived in limbo, and the doors of heaven were closed. The original truth, as we understand it after our transcendental experiences, is that it wasn't what is intended to be taught for all time, but truth becomes lost, as it were. So let's consider this one last metaphor. A Jesus comes on the scene to teach his followers the nature of gold. And because the disciples are not at the same stage of spiritual illumination as the Master, they don't see gold, they see silver. They may be infinitely higher in consciousness than the masses, but they are not at the level of the Master. When the disciples go out to teach on their own, they are not teaching gold, they are teaching silver. They also gather disciples who in turn are not at the level of their teachers, and what they see is copper. And what do you think happens? When they go out as teachers, they are not teaching silver or gold, they are teaching copper. As this process continues repeating itself, other disciples see, and they teach iron. Even the highest truth will first affect an individual according to the level of consciousness, and any level of consciousness is the result of thousands upon thousands of relative experiences. It would appear then that the greatest lesson life is teaching everyone is that truth must be individually discovered. When the individual grows to his ultimate capacities, there is no one exactly like him. He is a unique expression of God. Although endowed with the same spiritual qualities, he will manifest them in a unique and special way. God, in his infinite wisdom, saw fit not to create any two grains of sand alike, and I cannot believe that he would be any less meticulous in creating millions of human beings. The great self-discovery must come to everyone. The doors of heaven must be open in everyone's life. This is the purpose of creation, to reveal the infinite glory of God. Shall we begin now to make this lesson practical? Will you please join me in our closing meditation? Please take a moment to get comfortable in your seat and close your eyes. Close your eyes and let there be no influence on you from what's outside in this sanctuary, nothing to distract you. And rest your feet on the floor, flat. And place your hands in a comfortable position, either in your lap or at your side. Be comfortable so that we don't call attention to our bodies as we sit and relax. And just be still. And take in that deep breath and let it out slowly. And release. Release your stresses and your anxieties, worries and fears. Let go of all of those things that are swimming around inside your head. Let go of anger and resentment. Let go of jealousy. And be still in the peace and the quiet of this sanctuary. And go deep within. Go to the center of your being, where our Father waits, where he welcomes you with open arms, with great love, unconditional peace. And just be still. It has been said that there is music in the sighing of the reed, and there's music in the gushing of the rill. There is music in all things, if men had ears. The earth is but an echo of the spheres. There is a rhyme to all of life, and this rhythm is found in the beating of our hearts, the inhaling and the exhaling of our breath. It is found in the ebb and the flow of the tides, and the rising and the setting of the sun. The rhyme and the rhythm of life is God expressing in the soul of each and every one of us, to the degree that we are tuned in to his music and his truth. Living in the human condition, we often find ourselves surrounded by a cacophony of sounds, beats and bangs, clangs. All this noise shatters the sound of silence and the harmony and the peace of life. Our souls seek peace, quiet, and harmony. In our hearts, we desire the ears that can hear the sighing of the reeds, the music of the gushing rills, and the echo of the spears. All that we seek is already ours, for God our Father has placed himself within each of us. He has given us his invisible power to make our own music, our own harmony, our own peace, and our own way. Let us meet the circumstances and conditions of life directed by the great wisdom within, filled with faith, brought forth by understanding, willing the fulfillment of the law of God, filled with joy, and protected and surrounded by love. Father, help us, let the music of the soul play on, that we may be glad and rejoice in it, and that the gates of heaven will be opened for us. Amen. The Lord blesses you and keeps you. He causes his light to shine upon you. He is gracious unto you. He lifts your consciousness and gives you his infinite, eternal, unconditional love and all of his treasures as he opens the door to heaven. Amen.